the family business. Paul, last week, really said a lot of thank yous and was very specific about how the people in the church in Philippi had wrapped their lives around his. We learned that he was in prison at the time, that he is struggling at the time, and yet this letter is filled with joy and filled with hope. And some of that hope was at least in part founded on how helpful, how constant the support from the believers in Philippi were. Now, we're going to continue to talk about the family business. As I said, we're going to actually talk about the family business today, the gospel of Jesus Christ, and we're going to do it along with Paul. And I want you to, as I asked last week, I wanted you to open yourself up to maybe feeling a little warmly towards Paul, like maybe even appreciating him and his heart towards the people that he was writing for. And today, I want you to listen and read on the wall behind me. I want you to begin to appreciate Paul's absolute focus on the family business. I want you to feel his passion for the gospel. As we read the words that he wrote. So if you can bring up that first slide, I thank you. After all this is done today, I want you to give Jonathan Neese a high five if he'll let you, because he's going to be working the computer a lot as we cover several verses today. Hear the words of Paul. Now I want you to know, brothers and sisters, that what has happened to me has actually served to advance the gospel. This is Philippians 1, starting with verse 12. Him being imprisoned, him having been arrested, him having been all the things that he experienced, he's writing to them, and he says, I want you to know, brothers and sisters, I want you to it to be clear that what has happened to me has served to advance the gospel, the good news. So this is the first time we hear this here today. It served to advance the gospel. The struggles, the trials, the pain, the brokenness, the rejection, the isolation, the incarceration. Paul is saying it has served to advance the gospel. Now, I asked you to be open to see Paul's passion for the gospel, and we can see it right away. As a result, it's become clear throughout the whole palace guard and to everyone else that I'm in chains for Christ. This palace guard, think of the Navy SEALs and the Green Beret and Marine Force Recon. This is the top of the line. This is the palace guard. This is about 9,000 troops that are the best of the best of the best. And he says, throughout that group that is charged with guarding me, taking turns, being chained to me, the whole palace guard, it's been clear to them that I am here because of Jesus. Might as well read, be here because of the gospel. Next slide. And because of my chains, most of the brothers and sisters have become confident in the Lord and, excuse me, and dare all the more to proclaim the gospel without fear, right? They see him in chains, in prison, all the things that he's enduring. And because it's all being used to advance the gospel, he says the people that are catching on are now able to proclaim it without fear of those same things happening or without even consideration of fear if those things happen. The gospel. It is true that some preach Christ out of envy and rivalry, but others out of goodwill. Next slide. The latter do so out of love, knowing that I am put here for the defense of, say it with me, the gospel. The former preach Christ out of selfish ambition, not sincerely, supposing that they can stir up trouble for me while I'm in chains. The next slide. But what does it matter? The important thing is that in every way, whether from false motives or true, that Christ is preached. Christ here as a substitute of or for the gospel. Whether from those bad motives, those selfish motives, those trying to stir up trouble for me motives or for good, pure motives, what does it matter? The only thing that matters is the gospel of Jesus Christ being communicated one way or another to the world around. And Paul says, because of this, I rejoice. I rejoice is the verb form of joy. So he is joying, right? He is, we talked about this last week, that this joy is the idea of having the big picture, seeing above and beyond our circumstances, knowing what is coming, knowing where our hope is found, also known as the gospel. Paul says, because of this, I rejoice. The next line, he says, and I will continue to rejoice. So, we've been talking, Paul has been talking about the gospel. So let's dip into what is the gospel. And this is the question here, and I allowed my little inner nerd to come out and share with you this Greek word, euangelion, which is the word that we read when we read the English word gospel. And it equals good news. And I allowed myself to nerd out today because I want you to have this context. Euangelion became evangelium in Latin, which is where we get our words evangel or the good news, or where we get evangelism, the process of spreading the good news, or where we get the word evangelist, one who shares the good news. And I hope you catch in the passion and urgency of my voice, the passion and urgency of Paul. As he's writing this letter, he's saying there is absolutely nothing more important than this good news. He's still in prison. He's writing from prison, and he's joyful, and he's joying, he's rejoicing, because he's focused on the gospel, the power of the gospel in his circumstances to see the end from the place that he's at. To know that no matter what happens right now, he knows what's coming. He prefers what's coming, as we'll find out later here in this section of the letter. But I want you to understand it's the gospel that he clings to. This word euangelion isn't a Christian word by any stretch. It's just, it describes this message that goes out to proclaim victory. And usually it was a prideful thing. It was an incredibly important thing for the emperor or the most powerful general or the one challenging the political structure to send out everywhere across the land and tell the story about the great victory that they'd won and how everyone was going to benefit from it. The gospel. The great victory that's been won. And the good news that everyone who is subject in this kingdom will benefit from this great victory. And the gospel, would pontificate, it would expound on all the ways that the people would benefit from this great victory, that this great king or emperor would win. And our lives and what Paul does in this letter and continues to do is to expound on the benefits to us of the great victory that's been won. See Paul in prison, in chains, literally chained by a length of chain to one of these elite force members, these operators that, you know, they're the Delta Force, right? He's chained to them. They're responsible for ensuring that he stays put. He doesn't have a whole lot of freedom. He gets to write a letter or two. Maybe gets to sing a song or two. Maybe gets to pray out loud from time to time. And as Paul is describing this, and as we get bits of the record of his imprisonment and what he does in the book of Acts and elsewhere, we catch this picture of a man sunk down in the middle of what would be a terrible circumstance for anyone. And he's thinking in his mind, Jesus, what are you going to do? Not what are you going to do about freeing me, but what are you up to? What are you trying to accomplish here? How can this advance the gospel? And We're going to let that sit for a minute. I mean, just in a few short sentences, you've heard him absolutely describe and express his passion for the good news of this victory that's been won for everyone. And yet, in the midst of his circumstances that would crush anyone, he's thinking about how more people can hear the euangelion, the good news, how more people can experience the benefit that this great victory has won for them. Paul and I tangle a lot about a lot of things in his writing, but on this thing, I have such deep admiration, received so deeply from him, and I encourage you as well to do the same. As we jump into verse 19, the things start to shift a little bit. Go ahead and put that slide up. For I know that through your prayers and God's provision of the Spirit of Jesus Christ, what has happened to me will turn out for my deliverance. Through your prayers, believers in Philippi, through the provision of God, through the provision of his Spirit, and this word provision has sort of this understanding of outfitting an army to go on the march, right? The provision, everything that they need. It also has, interestingly enough for you musical people, has the connotation of what it costs to put a choir into a town so that it could sing and entertain everyone at some festival, right? This is everything they need, food and lodging and provisions, logistics. This is the depth of the connotation of this word provision. And I spent some time telling you that because oftentimes when we talk about the gospel, we leave it up here as this blurry 10,000 foot view construct that has no detail. And I hope we're bringing it down into your lives today. When we talk about God's provision, sometimes we talk about it as if it's in a fortune cookie. It's just this thing that's out there that we encounter, but I want you to hear that Paul is proclaiming that his provision is everything. It is all-encompassing. It is all of it in the Spirit of Jesus Christ. And he says, what happened to me will turn out for my deliverance, for my rescue, for my redemption, for my salvation. For me being set free from this prison. That's the context he's in after all. But don't miss the bigger picture of deliverance. Don't miss the bigger picture of what God's provision of his Spirit, what it can do, what its aim is, the great victory that it wins for us on a daily basis. And all of the bondage and all of the chains and all of the lies that it can set us free from. Man, let's go to the next slide. I eagerly expect and hope that I will in no way be ashamed, but will have sufficient courage so that now as always, Christ will be exalted in my body, whether by life by death. The words that we have translated here, eagerly expect, is this word picture of someone who's looking for something out in the distance. It's the only thing they're focusing on, and they're leaning out, and the root word for this is like to extend your neck, right? To look out for. Paul is looking for the hope. Right? He's expecting and eager for it. He knows it's coming. He's expecting it, and he's looking for it. And his hope is that he won't be ashamed. He won't be let down. The words and the prayers and the letters that he's written that certainly this palace guard has previewed, that they've heard, right? His posture and behavior towards them that they've witnessed. He's saying, I hope that I'll maintain my courage. I hope that I won't be ashamed. I pray that no matter what happens to me, to my body, whether I live or die, that I will stand up under this, that I will hold on to this hope. That is the gospel, that is the good news of this great victory that my king, that our king has won, and the benefit that his victory extends to each one of us still today. Whether by life or by death. And here's another significant change. Paul kind of in his letter shifts into like this personal reflective sort of moment. And bring that next slide up. He says, for me, to live is Christ, and to die is gain. And then he explains it a little bit. If I'm to go on living in the body, this will mean fruitfulness, fruitful labor for me. Yet what shall I choose? I don't know. I'm torn between the two, life or death. I desire to depart and be with Christ, which is better by far. Let me just go be with my King. Let me just go be with the one that's rescued me. Let me just go be with the one whose very name is good news. That's better than continuing in my circumstances, than continuing in my chains, than continuing in bondage. Paul is saying it's better to be with him. But then this reflection, but it's more necessary for you that I remain in the body. And then he kind of wraps up his quandary and says, convinced of this, I know that I will remain. Now, before we jump to the next slide, I just want you to hang with this for a moment. Paul's expressing something personal. He's expressing this reflection that he has, like, I just want to go and be with Jesus. I want all of this pain to be over. But at the same time, he says, but that's not what's best for you. Can you see why I'm so impressed with this guy? This gospel that he clings so tightly to, but also intends to give away so powerfully. He's so passionate about this good news reaching everyone that he says, if I stay, it's better for you. If I stay preaching and living the good news, proclaiming it wherever I am, then it's better for you. We get this. I mean, he's literally talking about, I'd rather just die and go be with Jesus, but I think I will live for your sake. And it speaks to me about this family business, right? It speaks to me about this thing that we're all gathered around and we're partnered in, the absolute power of it. And not that Paul presents this to us and we should feel guilty or like, you know, prodded to do something more with our lives, but that we should be captivated and inspired by his passion for you and for me. The fact that he stays a little longer, shares a little deeper, means that more of us through the ages have had the opportunity to hear the good news, to receive and live into the benefit of this great victory ourselves. Convinced of this, he says, I know that I will remain. The next slide. And I will continue with all of you for your progress and joy in the faith, advancing. Remember in that first section, verse 12, he said, all of this has happened to advance the gospel. It's the same word, to progress the gospel. And here he's saying, for you to progress in your joy in the faith, for you to have a deeper grip on this truth of the good news, for you to have a greater understanding of the benefit and the benefits that roll down from this great victory that encompass all of your lives. I'll continue with all of you for your progress and joy in the faith so that through my being with you again, your boasting in Christ will abound on account of me. What's the boasting in Christ? You ever boasted in Christ? This morning, I dropped a stone of testimony into our Ebenezer that normally looks like this, a cylinder of glass filling, and it blew the back end of it out, and Spencer and I were joking that that was one heck of a testimony I dropped in there. Boasting in Christ. This is how he's rescuing me today. This is the hope that I have in tomorrow. This is how, in the midst of the darkness and of the pain, I can have joy because I see with my neck sticking out, craning, looking for it, I see it coming. This is boasting, and Christ is sharing the good news with our folks, our friends, our neighbors. The gospel that Paul preaches and lives not only includes a life of suffering and denial for the greater glory of God, but also includes loving others and benefiting them, benefiting their lives with his presence. You ever thought about your gospel life benefiting the people around you? I've struggled with this, and I've shared this before in this room about how most of my life, one of the biggest lies that I've wrestled with has been that I'm not good enough for anybody to give a rip about. And that over time, the provision of God's Spirit in my life has slowly convinced me that that was a lie, and then slowly, slowly began to whisper and then speak and then shout into my life the truth about who I am, made in his image, called his son, worth his own life to redeem, to buy back, to release from bondage and prison, and to put me on my own two feet so that I can be a gift to the people around me, so that he can love people through my life. That's so contrary. I hope you know how weird it is for me to say that out loud. I feel weird. And then I don't, because I'm accepting more and more all the time that the presence of my life isn't just for me. It's not just for me to feel better. It's just not just for me to receive healing and for me to progress. It's for the people around me to see and to hear the good news. For us together to load up that Ebenezer and blow the back end of it out together, because we're overwhelmed by the benefits of the victory of our King. This is what Paul's writing about. I'm going to continue on with you so you progress in this. I'll continue on with you so that your testimony, your boasting, your passionate telling of the good news will only increase. And I think there's something here for us to really deal with. I identify a little with Paul in this, and what I want to say next, it's going to be clumsy, because it's coming out of here. But I want you to give it a shot. It's clear in the letters that Paul writes, it's clear in the histories about him that he's been through some things. Not a perfect life. Not a safe life. Not a life devoid of pain, not a life devoid of suffering even. But somehow he encountered the good news, and we know that story, right? Jesus appears to him himself and radically transforms his life. The provision of the Spirit of Jesus Christ envelops him. It just floods over him. It carries him away into this new life, where he's received comfort, he's received freedom, he's received hope. Later in one of his letters, in the letter to Corinth, he writes, I'll paraphrase, that the comfort that you've received is now the comfort that you can give others because you know the good news. You know the provision. You've looked for the hope and had it come. You know what they're feeling and you know how to share good news in a way that's good news. The comfort you've received is the comfort you can share. And my friends, this is what's going on in my life. This lie that I've wrestled with, that I'm not good enough, is being replaced by the truth that his provision is flowing in me, that he loves me. This is the good news for Bill, that I'm not perfect, and in many ways, I'm not even good, but I'm good enough for him to love me and spend everything he had to buy me back. I gotta tell you, I'm starting to feel a little swagger. And that is the benefit of the gospel for my life that I can share with you. Paul is sharing the benefit that the gospel of Jesus Christ has been to him, and he shares it with every church that he starts, with every believer that he disciples and mentors to go out and continue to proclaim this good news. The good news has become his good news. The good news has become my good news. The comfort that I've received, the healing that I've received, is the comfort and the healing that I can share with you. So as we close up this part of this letter that Paul has written, I hope, again, that you have gained a more detailed, lower down on the shelf, you can look right at it, understanding of what the good news is, this gospel that he's willing to live or die for. I pray that you have. I pray you're stirred up about it. I pray you want to know more. But here's the bigger question that I have that I want to leave you with today, and I'd call the band up. The bigger question that I have for you and for me today is, what is your good news? What is your good news? What is the benefit that you've received by the provision of the Spirit of Christ that you're convinced of? I once was lost, but now I'm found. I was blind, but now I see. What is your good news? What is the gospel for you? Because if you leave it up here as this thing on a shelf, one, you might not experience the benefit. Two, what's your motivation for sharing anything more than words with someone else? Paul says, I am going to stay here so that you progress in your ability to see the end from the place that you're in now, regardless of your circumstances. I'm going to stay here so that you increase in your capacity to boast in Jesus, our King, the one who has won a great victory, and the benefits of his victory rain down on us. They fill our streets and our homes. They fill the quiet places that we run to hide. They flood us. What is it? What are those things that he's rescued and rescuing you from? That is good news. Hey, as you guys begin,